Well, I want to tell you a story that just broke. Efren Zimbalist Jr., the son of the very famous musical parents who established his own lasting celebrity in two of television's most popular series, 77 Sunset Strip and The FBI Has Died. He was 95. The series would post photos from the FBI's real-life most wanted list, and some of those pictures led to arrests, which helped give the show the complete seal of approval of the agency's real-life director, J. Edgar Hoover. So he's dead, Efren Zimbalist Jr. at the age of 95. I used to remember both those TV shows, 77 Sunset Strip and The FBI. They were indeed classics. We're going to have open lines for you, but first you get to hear little Charlie. Charlotte is my two-year-old granddaughter, and she did this little video for me. So I'm going to let you hear her reciting a little bit of the alphabet. Keep in mind, she just turned 2 years old. She's just a little kid. Here we go.
Hey, okay, start singing. Go ahead. Okay, good.
There she is. 2 years old. How about that? Anyways, we'll be back with open lines in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, Coasties, welcome back. Let's go to the phones. We've got open lines for the next couple hours for you. Gary in Rochester, New York on the wild card line. Hey, Gary. Good morning.
How's it going?
Good. I hope you're well, too.
Okay. So I was hearing that last guy talk about how he was on the edge of suicide, and it was then that he had an encounter with God or whatever.
Yeah, he had his epiphany, that's for sure.
That was pretty intense. I had a similar moment like that. I wasn't outright suicidal with a knife in my hand, but I've been going through life kind of like drinking too much.
Mm-hmm.
Was trying to sober up, but I couldn't. It was kind of like really bleak about my existence to the point where I was laying in bed kind of like, God, are you out there? Can you hear me?
Help me.
Yeah. That night I had this weird dream of a former job where I was a cop. And the people in the dream were like looking at me, people I've known throughout my life. They're like, Gary, a cop. Ha, ha, ha. That's pretty funny. And then in the dream, a cop that used to go to that deli where I used to work gave me a pair of his black gloves. So I didn't really think much about it, but I went to work in the ED where I was working, the emergency room, the trauma room. And just after my second break, being a musician, I was kind of like, that was a weird dream. Like, I had music in my head. I was like, I'm going to write a tune about a black hand being the black glove. Well, just then, I turned the corner with my cart. All I did really was stock stuff. And this, like, jolly-looking hospital chaplain that no one's ever seen before or since, like, from, like, 100 yards away in a crowded hallway. As soon as he turned the corner, he's like, boy, you must show me to the red elevators. And I was like, okay. Showed him to the red elevators, and this girl sneezed right between us just as I turned the corner to point the way, which is odd anyways because the office of the hospital chaplain's is right off of the elevators,
yeah.
The red elevators. So no one's seen him before, since I've asked every hospital chaplain. You ever see this big, jolly guy with a leather-bound briefcase, or I mean a Bible with a leather cover? None of the chaplains have seen him. Anyhow, she sneezed. I was like, bless you. And I pointed to the red elevator. She was like, bless me. Instantly, for the rest of the day, there's a very bizarre, everything in sync air to the ED. And I took the gold elevators up to get a juice. And I was like, my dollar, it wasn't taking my dollar. I was like, getting really pissed. And after about 4 minutes, I'm like, I'm not going to give up on this, but it just wouldn't work. And I had to be back to work to stock, like, blanket warmers and stuff. As I looked up, there was, like, this NFL-looking guy that was, like, 6'5" with immaculate skin with, like, this huge gold platinum chain with a cross on it. He was like, here, brother, take this. And then just then this coworker got off the elevator. She was like, oh, Gary, that's a blessing. And, like, the first blessing that I gave the girl that sneezed, and then the non-existent ghost hospital chaplain that blessed me, and then the blessing from the, like, 6'7", like, NFL-looking immaculate, like, million-dollar bling-bling cross-wearing dollar guy. the three blessings happen within 3 seconds. I could go on forever. I'm getting kind of excited because I've never been.
Well, don't. But get to the bottom if you can, Gary. What happened?
All right. Well, a series of inexplicable, almost impossible coincidences happened that day. It was kind of like I drank my juice, went out to smoke a cigarette. In the background, I heard these people talking about this woman who works for the Postal Service, but her passion is demolition derby, and she was going to be in a demolition derby later that night. Anyhow, hours later, when I happened to be walking to go smoke another cigarette, I was walking back, and here comes like a woman who like exactly matches this description on foot in a postal uniform, walking into the ED. Then this transport employee was like, "Do you have any gum?" And it was such a weird day. I'm like, "No, but I'm going to stop what I'm doing and go get gum now." And so I went to get gum. They didn't have any.
Hey, Gary, I gotta tighten you up here. So what
happened? Well, the story goes on forever. It's just like
I know
a
we
series
can't talk
of inexplicable coincidences that kind of struck me as archangelic and impossible.
Well, they were everywhere. I mean, they were everywhere. But why that hospital? Who knows? Let's go to Mindy, Salt Lake City, Wildcard Line. Hey, Mindy.
Hi. I wanted to share my experience for the lady that was wondering about suicide. 4 years ago, my husband had made some poor financial choices, and we were about to lose everything. And I had this crazy idea that if I took my life, they could I know. I know it was dumb, but they could have money. And so I was at my mom's house, and I took 5 bottles of her medication. One of the medications should have thinned out my blood, and the other medication should have shut down my organs altogether. But anyway, so I'd taken the medication, and my mother had found me. She thought I was having a diabetic coma because of the stress. And so she called 911, and then all of a sudden I sat up and I said, "No, I've taken your medication." And so she freaked out, and I remember I was gone at that point, totally out of it. And I remember being in the ambulance, and then we were at the hospital in the ICU, and I was above my body, and two men came to me, and I believe they were escorts. And one of them said, "My name is Ben," and the other one would not introduce himself. And they said, "You have the choice to stay here, or you have the choice to come with us." And I said, "Well, I want to come with you." And so I decided to go with them, and all of a sudden we're walking down this most gorgeous path, like cobblestones and flowers. And we enter this room, and there's this most, like this beautiful rocking chair, and we're sitting in there, and all of a sudden I'm holding this little baby, and then there's two other kids by me, and I'm like, okay. And I had two miscarriages, placed the baby for adoption, got married, had my daughter, and have not had any children since. And so I'm holding this baby thinking, okay, am I going to be having a baby? I didn't know quite what to think. And then all of a sudden I remember this, like there was just this bright white light, and I'm like, okay. And I'm like, am I thinking to myself, am I going to go to hell? I've just killed myself. And I just remember, no. And I was like, you have a choice at this point. You can choose to go back, or you can choose to stay here. And I was kind of shown what it would be like if I stayed, and it wasn't hell. It's like your guest was saying, it's not, you know, there's no hell. And it was still going to be a wonderful, beautiful thing. But I was like, I don't think I want to experience that. And I was told, well, if you go back, you're going to have gifts, you're going to have abilities. And, you know, do you want to go back and help these children? And I'm like, these children? I'm like, what is he talking about? And I'm like, no, I want to go back. Well, 5 days later, anyways, I came to, and I'm now alive. But since then, I've become a massage therapist and a foot zoner and a Reiki master, and I'm now going to school to be a midwife.
Good for
and
you.
Every
changed
every
your life.
Person, yeah, every person I work with gets pregnant, and I think that that's kind of what the experience was. My sister-in-law never thought she'd have children, and you know, they got pregnant 10 years later, and so I just, anyways, I just was kind of too bad your guest isn't on, but I was just wondering, like, if everybody that experienced those things has those things happen. And then another thing, I later found out who Ben was. I kept telling my husband, I'm like, I need to go to my cousin drowned when he was 2. And I kept feeling like we needed to go to his plot. And so I went there with my husband, and I kept hearing, step over 5 plots and you'll find me. And I kept telling my husband, I'm like, can you help me? And so we walk over 5 plots, and I look down, And I see this guy's name is Ben, and I start bawling, and my husband's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, this is a man. This is a man that came to find me. And he's like, what do you mean? And so we did some research, and we found out the son that I placed for adoption when I was 19, it was his adoptive mom's brother. And so that's the man who came.
I was talking to you from the other side.
Yeah, and I found out that the birth father's grandfather came to the woman that adopted my son in a dream 3 days in a row, telling her she would be adopting my son so that they would know. And I didn't even know the woman that I had chosen, that they were even neighbors. Like,
well, aren't you glad that you didn't complete what you tried to do?
No, I know. And so I just want that lady to know that it's not, you know, like I found from my experience that that's how some of us heal. Like that, like for me, I saw that that was the answer, but I was, you know, I chose to come back. But if they're for their healing process or their process in life, you know, because like your guest said, it's all about choice. And so they were given the choice to either, I believe, because like if they were to were supposed to come back and that was their choice, they could have.
Of course they could have. But, you know, I look, suicide is not the way out for anybody, with the exception if you are in constant, tremendous, horrible, unbelievable pain. I guess I might understand that. Tom's got a text for me back there in the L.A. studios. What do you got, Tom?
George, this is from Amelia in West Virginia. She says, I heard you say that our astronauts might not make it to the ISS anymore. Why is that, George?
Well, because there's talk that the Russians, because of the Ukraine situation, aren't going to take them up. And they are the only way we can get to the International Space Station aboard their rockets.
Would they be able to operate the space station if they didn't take us up?
No, I don't think they could.
So they're in a pickle just like...
Yeah, but I don't think they would care. I think they'd go up, get their cosmonauts, get the... I would hope they'd be humanitarian enough to bring everybody back rather than have them all stuck up there.
Man, we got to see how this plays out.
It's a mess.
Oh, my gosh.
And of course he's right. It's going to get worse.
Let's check it out.
Okay, thanks. Next up, we go to Ken in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Ken. Thank you for calling.
Hi, George.
Hi.
How you doing, George?
Yes, sir. Good.
Hey, listen, thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you. You're welcome.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you for the freedom that we do have left.
Yeah, we hang by a thread up with that, don't we?
That's right.
But we're going to win. In the long run, I think we're going to be okay.
We will not be defeated.
Nope.
quick comment here. I'm a truck driver, and I was up in Chicago, and I was up there by O'Hare Airport, and I kind of was looking at those airplanes coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the shorter, stubbier aircraft, they come in pretty fast. But the larger, the more transcontinental-type aircraft,
right?
I wonder how they actually hang in the air. They look so slow. Now, it could be an optical illusion, right?
They're so big, they just look like they float in, don't they?
Yeah. And I'm thinking that Flight 370, you know? If that pilot could slow that airplane down to, I don't know how fast, but and sort of land that aircraft in the water, do you think that thing would, like, submarine?
Eventually, it would sink because of its just huge size.
Right.
But they could be able to float it for just a bit, but that plane is so big, Kenny, I don't think they'd have time to even, you know, get lifeboats out or anything. I don't even think there are lifeboats on that thing.
I know. I mean, it would just submarine right away.
Yeah, and just a chute, okay, and they'd float down.
Awesome, George. Listen, you guys got the best bumper music in the radio industry. And great show. First time caller, long time listener. Thank you very much for taking
Thank
my
you,
call.
Ken. I'm going to be in Cleveland, I think, the first weekend of September at a major event. We haven't posted it yet on the website, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to be out there. So just keep checking the calendar, and that's where I will be. Let us go now to Greg in New Mexico, first-time caller. Greg, welcome to the program. You are on the air with us. Nope, there is no Greg. He's gone. Matt in Evansville, Indiana. Matt, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
How are you doing?
I'm well.
Well, great. How's Mr. Bell?
I think he's fine. He hasn't communicated with us in years.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. My question is, I've been watching a lot of Jordan Maxwell lately, and I know you're well informed.
I know Jordan well.
Is it actually fact that our birth certificates are bought and sold on the New York Stock Exchange?
I you know what? I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Jordan believes that, but I'm not sure.
I find it hard. You know, I listen to you a lot. I love your show, and I'm glad you touch on so many subjects. But that was one of those things that really intrigued me that is a fact.
Why do they want to buy our birth certificates? What are they doing?
I'm not sure. Under his impression, they kind of use us as a commodity.
I wonder if anybody's bought President Obama's. I wonder what it says.
I don't know if they can find that one.
You may not. You may be right.
Well, thank you, Mr. Norrie. I appreciate your time.
Okay. Yep. Mine would say Detroit, Michigan. That's where I was. Mary in Bentonville, Arkansas. Just out there, Mary. Welcome to the program.
I know, George. I was so sorry I missed you. I was planning on going to see you. And
I had a great time there.
You did?
It's a really quaint area.
I'm just getting used to it. I just moved here.
And Walmart owns everything.
Yes, a Walmart on every corner.
Just about. You're right. What's going on?
Well, I just was calling you tonight to just touch base a little bit about the experience that I had in my life, the tragedies. I had two husbands commit suicide.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Two?
And two. Yeah. And under different circumstances, but my second one was very, very strange and heart-wrenching. I was telling Tom that about a week or so before he did it, his niece had come over and brought over a Ouija board.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
He might have. Did he get possessed?
Yeah.
The demons drove him.
Yeah, and he was being tormented. It was so sad. He was so scared and so afraid, and I had no idea really what was going on. And you know, when he was talking to me and telling me these things, I was like, he kept telling me, pray for me, and you know, I'd pray hard, but I wasn't really sure until after his death and everything. I had talked to Sharon Margolis, and she told me what had happened.
God, what are the odds of that happening? Thanks, Mary. Well, it's time for our shout out to those of you listening to Coast on our 570 radio stations across North America. Hello, Coast Insiders. Thank you for all you do. And XM, of course, on the Indie Channel 104 and Sirius as well. And the various chat rooms about Into Infinity, Fantastic Forum 2, Imaginative World, Sorcery IRC. Those who follow us on the Facebook and Twitter, the Yahoo Chats, the Northern Kentucky Paranormal Group, the SoCal UFO Meetup Group, the Hollywood Ghost Hunters, and our buddy Greg the Cook in St. Louis. Thanks for listening and supporting Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Let's go back to the phones. We've got open lines for you for the next hour and a half. Let's go to Tom, Long Island, New York. Welcome to the program, Tom. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How are you doing today?
Good, Tommy. Thank you.
So a couple weeks ago, I had a dream about a black helicopter being over my house in the middle of the night.
Okay.
It wasn't really that scary or anything, but I remember waking up and being like, oh, that was kind of a strange dream. Well, yesterday I came home from work, and I was sitting there just relaxing a little bit after work, had the door open because I had the dog outside, and like a freight train, I could hear this noise coming, like, so loud. So I ran out to the back door real quick, and there was a black helicopter over my house. And I'm telling you, this thing was so low. It was, the trees over near my house aren't that tall. And it was right above the tree line.
Jeez.
It was definitely kind of creepy.
What do you think they were looking for?
I don't know. It definitely had some call numbers on the side of it, but I couldn't get, it was just the angle. It was right above my house. I couldn't read them. So I called my neighbor to, you know, confirm to make sure I wasn't crazy. And, of course, I wasn't. So he, you know, he came over and his girlfriend actually witnessed the whole thing. She was outside working in the garden and saw the whole thing. So it's pretty creepy.
It is strange. Those are, you just never know what they're doing.
You really don't. I was thinking that they were dropping some of those little nanite mosquitoes or something. Who knows? I also have another question for you.
Yeah, sure.
About a month ago, I called and you hung up on me.
Why'd I hang up on you?
I don't know.
Did you say something?
Well, I asked you why 2 months ago you said Coast to Coast was going in a different direction. And then you hung up on me, and then you told the whole world that you never said that. So you called me a liar to the whole entire world.
I'm not calling you a liar, but we've never said it's going in a different direction. Where'd you hear that?
I was actually on the phone with you the night that you said it, the night that you guys let John B. Wells go. You said Coast to Coast was going in a different direction.
No, and we didn't let him go, by the way.
No?
Nope.
What happened with that whole thing?
He wanted to do his own daytime show, and off he went.
Really?
Yeah. You heard different direction from them, not us. That's what happened. No, we're absolutely not. We're still doing what we're doing. The number one rated, highest rated program in the world. We're still doing what we're doing. What we've added are some of these current events, these breaking stories, these planes that are missing, the drones that they fly over everybody's head, the stories that you just don't want to take anymore. That you have to stand up and fight for it. That's what we're doing. Simple as that. Let's go to Wanda, Rochester, New York. Hello, Wanda. It's your turn.
Hello. My name is Wanda Julie Manuler, and I'm calling to say that I so owe Coast to Coast and that angel, Gary, my life. I was suicidal that day after I lost the demolition derby because I'm a 4'11" postal office woman, and the only thing I have going for me really is being cool at the demolition derby. But I crashed like immediately, and then I was actually walking into the hospital. I was going to try to save my life. I was going to tell them I was suicidal and everything. I went to the vending machine. And I opened up this package of Skittles that I bought on the vending machine. They were all red, and I hate red Skittles. And to me, that was a sign that it was like, this is really the day I'm going to end it all. I'm going to end it all. And I met that guy, Gary, who called and was rambling earlier. He was like there at the vending machine. And he said to me, that is just them doing like funhouse yoga.
Well, I got to tell you, you're both rambling. So be it. I think you must be related to him. It's one of those nights. We go to Greg in New Mexico. He's back with us. Greg, go ahead.
Well, hello, Mr. Doherty. I hope all is well with you and yours.
I'm well.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. I really am. I want to ask you a couple of tough questions. Please forgive me. I have a slight mild case of laryngitis. I hope you can hear me okay.
I can, but not well.
Okay. Excuse me. I was going to ask you two questions, and I'll take my I'll listen to it off the air. It might be a little bit difficult, but number one, in all the years, because you're like a library, all the people you've had, the different people you've had on your program, number one question, what bothers you or upsets you the most of, you know, events or current events, you know, that you thought about that bothers you? And number two, what is your take overall on the conditions of the world as we live it?
Well, let me tell you, what bothers me the most are politicians, people that have been elected, that people have entrusted to, you know, do the right thing, when they lie to us. That bothers me the most. When they manipulate, when they get greedy, when they do things to line their own pockets and take advantage of American people. That bothers me the most. And what's the condition of our country? Look, this is the best country in the world. Make no mistake about that. anything that we do that might criticize portions of government and everything else has nothing to do with love of country, believe me. Spent 9 years in the Navy giving back just a little bit of what I thought I could give back. It's the best country in the world. Yet, it has made huge mistakes as well. Huge mistakes. We've lost our manufacturing sector. We have gotten involved too much with people's rights. We've gotten involved too much in other countries. We've made a lot of mistakes. And I just wish we would take a step back and realize what we're doing as a nation and the perspective of what other people think about us. And in spite of all of that, we've got the best people on this planet. Dedicated, hardworking Americans, people who can't work, trying. It's a great country. So, what's the condition of the country? I think in the long run, we're going to be okay. It's going to be bumpy, but we'll get there. Let's go to Chuck in San Diego. Welcome to the program. Chuck, you're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Hello, George.
Hey, Chuck.
First time caller, all-time listener.
Well, great.
I got a story for you. I've been wanting to get on the phone and talk to you about this for a long time. Me and a couple of friends of mine, well, a few friends of mine that are really skywatchers, took me out. We were out in this guy's backyard, and we're watching the sky, and, you know, and we're, it's a constellation. I'm not sure which constellation it is in the sky, but it's a three stars in a triangle. And they told me to concentrate on that and then just keep looking. And then all of a sudden, it's like 727, 747 come flying by, and they're all, look. Now watch the speed. Watch that speed. Okay, and that one flew over. And it looked like a little Cessna was coming. They told me to watch that one and how fast it's going. We sat there for a little bit watching this guy. All of a sudden, look. There's one. He's pointing up, and it was a dot. I mean, just a dot. And it was hauling. I mean, it was moving like you would not believe towards this triangle. And he goes, watch it. As soon as it hits that barrier between those two, so watch, up, boom, and it was gone. I was like, whoa, I got to go home. I wanted to believe, you know, that there's other people out there, other things out there, beings, whatever. But when I seen it that night, that just blew my mind, because the way that little star or whatever it was flying so fast. It was amazing.
Well, you know, there's definitely something out there. I'm convinced of it. This universe is 14 billion years old. 14 billion. We're only 4.5 billion. So there are civilizations that have had a jump start on us. And everything's the same out there. You know, it's the primordial soup. It's the same everywhere. Solar systems are born the same way. Everything's the same. I think there are millions of civilizations out there. Millions. All right, Tom, you've got another text for us. What do you have?
I do. It's from John in Indianapolis, Indiana. He says, hey, George, I have a friend who doesn't believe in any kind of afterlife. Lights out, and that's it. So if there is an afterlife, will he still get to go to wherever it is, even though he doesn't believe?
If there is one, of course he will.
Even if he doesn't believe?
Yeah. The believing or not has nothing to do with what happens once you go, assuming he's correct.
Well, we don't know that.
And if he's not correct, he's not going to know anyway, is he?
Yeah, but we don't know what's over there, so we don't know if believing about it matters or not.
Doesn't matter to you? Who cares?
Doesn't matter to me. I believe what I believe.
Believe what you believe. And if you're wrong, you're not going to know about it.
That's true.
My point. Simple as that. Let's go to Pocatello, Idaho. Sarah's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Sarah, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm fine. I hope you are, too.
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good.
I just have a quick question for you about this whole death row situation. Really, like, what is the big deal? They were going to kill him anyway. Does it really matter how he died?
Well,
I mean, if they're worried about the suffering and whatever, I'm just saying, if he's on death row, he probably made a couple people suffer.
He probably did, assuming he did what he did.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering, if they were, you know, just going to kill him anyway, like, why is everyone getting so upset about it?
Well, it's probably the way he did. They think it was inhumane with, I think the chemicals were leaking, and it was a mess for him.
Okay. All right.
I've been a proponent in the death penalty for years, though I do think that if you're going to put someone to death, you better have DNA evidence that makes it absolutely sure that this guy was, or this woman, did this heinous crime. Because if you have the slightest doubt, even though they're convicted, don't kill them. Because I think that there have been people on death row who've been killed, and they were probably innocent. It is not a deterrent. I don't think anybody who goes out and kills somebody thinks, oh, I'm going to get caught, and they're going to kill me. They don't think of that. They never do. It's not a deterrent. It's just society's way of saying, you know what? Get away. We don't want you on this planet. Breathing the air we breathe. West of the Rockies, it's John's turn in Everett, Washington. Hey, John, go ahead.
Good evening, George, or good morning. Pleasure to talk to you.
You too.
George, I'm going to be 60 years old in, about 5 months from now.
Well, good. Good for you.
And I've lived a very dramatic life, you might say. I was brought up Catholic. Well, that matters. I've had an uncle who committed suicide when I was about 9 years old, back in 1963. Later that year, a friend of mine was killed by a drunk driver.
Okay.
And even later that year, JFK was assassinated. I've been around death all my life. I had a father that he took off when I was 13 years old. He was very abusive physically, sexually, treated me like number two. I hate to put it that way, but I was treated
you bad. That's what
very badly, very badly. I quit high school when I was 16 years old. I went back to college. I went back to school and got my GED at 37. And I learned something that was extremely, I don't know why, I don't know how. Now, for 20 years, I'm not in school. I have a 14th grade reading average. I quit high school when I was 16 years old. And I was told that I'm very articulate, that I'm eloquent when I speak. I can speak in front of a lot of people. I've done it on occasion. And when I write, when I blog, I'm very eloquent. I get my point across. I get emotion, and I get, you know, I really get into it. George, if this is just a brief thing, alcoholism, drug addiction, for myself, homelessness, sober a long time, homeless even, sober. If somebody wrote a book, if I wrote a book about myself, I asked myself, because I was told to write.
And how would it end? How would the book end, John? That last chapter, what would you say?
What would I say? What would I say? And you know what? After all these things, you know, wanting to, you know, after all everything I've gone through, you know, you can survive. You can survive anything.
That's right.
You know,
look, you're living proof. You pulled yourself up. You made it happen. You did it. And that's the most important thing. Let's take one more call, maybe two, before the break. Then we'll come back with more open lines. We will go to Clarkton, North Carolina. Jeremy's with us, east of the Rockies. Jeremy, hello.
Hey, George, how you doing, man?
Okay, my friend.
I'm a first-time caller. I've listened to you a long time. But me and my great-grandmother saw this creature when I was a kid,
And I've never on TV or internet, anywhere ever heard anybody say they've seen anything like it. I live in rural North Carolina, and we lived on my grandpa's farm down a long dirt road. And at that time, there was corn on each side of the dirt road. It was in the summer. Well, my great-grandma was babysitting me because my dad was farming and my mom was doing her thing. So we looked out the window. For some reason, we just decided to look out the window. Out of the cornfield onto the dirt road, there was this, and it looked, the best way I can describe it, we saw it from the back. We didn't see its face. It looked like a kangaroo. It was about 4 or 5 foot tall. It was, like I say, a good distance away. It looked exactly like a kangaroo. It had a tail and everything. The only difference was it was smut black with long hair. It was like, and we saw it twice in a 2 week period.
Like a chupacabra, I bet.
Maybe so, but it hopped. That's the thing. It hopped like a kangaroo.
But definitely was not a kangaroo.
No, because I've never heard of it. I've never heard of any long haired, smut black kangaroos.
No, I have not.
And I was just wondering if you have ever heard of anything like that, or maybe some of your listeners or something.
I have heard some descriptions, Jeremy, of a chupacabra, assuming that's what it was. But people have said that it seems to have this hopping feeling to it and look, and it does have a kangaroo appearance. So maybe that's it. I'm going to come back, more open lines in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.